Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Ken Taylor as my special expert guest. Ken Taylor was born in Vancouver, BC, and graduated from Burnaby South High School in 1962. He then attended Western Washington State College and graduated in 1967 with a teaching degree. Ken retired in 2000 after teaching for 33 years at Burnaby Central Secondary School, where he also coached track and field. Four athletes from Ken's track and field program went on to compete in the Olympic Games for Canada, and six to the Commonwealth Games. Ken built his track and field program around the team concept, even though track and field is considered an individual sport. Ken coached his teams to 15 BC High School track and field championships, 9 second place finishes, and several third place finishes. In recognition of his achievement and dedication to his sport, Ken was inducted into the Burnaby Sports Hall of Fame as a coach in 2004. Good morning, Ken, and thanks for taking the time to participate as my special guest on this edition of SNU.
Well, thanks for having me here, Corey.
It's great to have you as both my previous high school coach of track and field and really, really good friend. Ken, why did you decide to go into teaching, thinking way back when you were maybe just a 15 or 16-year-old? Were you kind of thinking about going to teaching at that time?
Well, I had no ambitions at all as far as what my career was going to be at that point. But all of a sudden, around grade 11 and 12, I was running pretty good. And was the top sprinter in the school. And I was very involved in sports all my life. And I got sort of sidetracked into track somewhere around grade 11 or 12. And I saw the phys ed teachers at the school. There were three of them, and I saw the nice life they were living. And I thought, well, I'd like a lifestyle like that. And one of the ways I could get that was to go on in track. And I eventually got a scholarship for the first year at Western Washington State College and got very interested in becoming a teacher. And while I was at Western, I also picked up a biology minor.
So you were going in to be a PE teacher?
That was my original intention.
And what does it take? What do you study when you're going into university to become a phys ed teacher?
Well, we took athletic injuries, history of phys ed, all of the different sports. We had to do courses in all of that.
How about things like kinesiology or physiology? Do you get into understanding the function and structure of the body?
We did a lot of that. Yeah, we did physiology, but most of that came from my biology background. It was a little more intense than the phys ed program's presentation of that material.
Now, I, as a student, I don't believe I had the good fortune of not being one of your students in biology, but what is it that you're trying to get across to the kids as a biology teacher, knowing that, that bio means life? What are you trying to convey to the kids in school in biology?
Well, I think best explanation of that is I took a geology course once, and you know, you have to take certain courses in university and in high school, and people wonder why you take them. And the geology professor said, well, look, we live in the earth all our life. Why not learn something about it? And I think that's the same with biology. We live in an animal and plant environment all our life. I think it's excellent that you know about those things. And rather than just look around and say, well, that's a tree or that's a, you know, a, whatever animal, cow, horse, whatever. I know a little bit about it. Know the relationship to yourself, especially when you take your kids to the beach and they're looking at all these little organisms on the seashore and they ask you what it is. You say, well, I don't know. It's a whatever. Well, if you did a little bit of biology, you could tell them a little bit more about it. You don't have to get into dissecting them or anything, but at least you could be a little more informative toward them.
So if it's a study of life, then we're part of that. And therefore, our role on the planet and our connection to everything is more meaningful if we study biology.
Excellent. Right. You know about what's around you and how you interact with everything. Everything's interdependent on each other.
I knew I should have been a biology teacher.
Yeah, it would have been a great one.
No, but I never did teach biology or become a teacher, but I have a tremendous interest in biology. And I have learned by studying biology, which anyone can study by buying a book or getting a book or going on the internet, how significant the cell is on a cellular level to the health of the whole body. And then the energy cycle, we're going to get into that a little bit later. But now, when you were in college and you were competing as a track and field athlete, do you think that that had or played a role in your eventually becoming a coach in track and field in high school?
Oh, definitely. Going into phys ed, I was definitely setting my sights on becoming a coach eventually once I got a teaching job. And track and field seemed to be the most appealing to me, and there are the other sports as well. But track took up a lot of time, and when I started teaching at Burnaby Central, they didn't have a track and field program. It had sort of gone downhill, and I had to bring it back up. And I got very interested in that and very committed. And I started out with two really great athletes, Ian Gordon and Doug Chapman, and that certainly got the ball rolling. And as you know, success breeds success. We had two successful years, and after that we had another athlete come in, and we continued to just attract good athletes from the program.
Now, I know that you've got a very keen eye for picking talent. I remember meeting you for the first time, and you have a way of getting inside the student's head. So what is it that you feel or get from a student that gives you the sense that this person has the potential to be an athlete?
Well, in phys ed, you're looking all the time for potential athletes for your team, and one of the things I look for is their mobility with their hands and their feet, especially in soccer and that, if they're very dextile, we're playing indoor soccer in the winter, or they're playing some other sport where they have to throw a ball and that. These are all relevant to track. If we go out and do laps in the warm-up and that, I watch the way they run. I watch their style. Sometimes we'll have a track meet in the phys ed class in the spring, so you pick out people there. But a lot of the footwork in that, especially for the throwing events, especially if they've got good soccer skills or good hand-eye coordination as well for the throwing.
Now, I know in my experience, you also exposed me to a lot of different components. Mm-hmm. I remember trying the pole vault and the high jump and the shot put and the discus, and then I sort of found myself in the hammer. Yeah. So that's usually what you do as well with other athletes. You try and get them exposed to different types of the components of track.
Well, first of all, I try to recruit them out and get them out and see if I can keep them there for a few track meets. And when we go to the track meets early in the year, they're not as competitive, of course, as near the end of the year. So what I do is I just say, look, go in any three or four events you want today, because if you're going in and trying something you're feeling comfortable with and you think you can do, then, of course, you know, you're going to take a liking to that event. And if they happen to have a good performance in that, then they tend to just attract to that event themselves. But I constantly encourage them to try other events, because I'm not the one that's going to say, hey, look, you're a sprinter, or you're a hammer thrower. I can suggest it. They may not like it. They may just get over to that triple jump and just find they love jumping. And, of course, their speed on the track will help them down the runway on the triple jump.
Now, when you think of variables that influence athletic performance, like skill training, coaching comes to mind as one of the most important. How important is it for an athlete to have a coach? And is there a difference between an athlete who's great in terms of performance? Can something be drawn out of him with a coach as opposed to having no coach at all?
Oh, I think so, definitely. I think the coach is, the athlete's like a rubber band, and the coach is a person that pulls that rubber band and continually stretches them, having them to risk, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, not to break the rubber band, but just continually to see improvement and show them ways to improve their performances. That, in turn, I think, just develops confidence in the athlete, and the athlete then just gets, you know, more inspired, him or herself.
What is the driving motive behind every athlete? Why would you want them to get involved in sport? What's the main reason?
Well, I think it teaches you time management. It teaches you self-discipline. And it also allows you to achieve some success in something. A lot of kids we had in track were not that successful in some of the other sports. But in track and field, they found their niche and went on to become provincial champions. And that doesn't do anything but increase your confidence and your stick-to-itness, no matter what you take up the rest of your life. Because track's a daily thing. We went out every day. We practiced every day. You either showed up or, you know, you'd hear from me.
Running seems to be something that everybody in track and field gets involved with. I mean, as a hammer thrower, I did run as part of my warm-up, did some sprinting, etc. But the sprinters didn't throw the hammer, but they ran. So running seems to be the central component of all track and field athletes. Is that true?
Well, I'd say so. Running is a conditioner for the field event people. They're not going to be doing any heavy duty sprinting, except a fun event at the end of the meet where we used to have a weight man's relay, and that was fun to watch them, especially passing the baton. Running's essential to the approach to the high jump, the jumps, the long and the triple, and running's essential to, of course, the running events and the hurdles. And that's a more of a conditioning thing in the running there versus just running for just cardiovascular for the throwers.
So when you find somebody that has good natural speed, because I can recall growing up in school and there were people in school that were just by reputation, everyone knew that they were really fast. Yeah. I remember this two guys in school. One was very short, one was very tall, and it was between them. They were the two fastest guys. So how do you make that person faster when it comes to the technology of training them from a coach's point of view?
Well, I mean, I think that's their level of fitness. Their level of fitness will determine their level of success. There's a lot of fast kids, and some of them gas out around 50 meters and don't have that endurance to go the 100, the full 100 meters, if that's what they're out for. So you just keep training them, and you keep stretching them into different events. Like, they think they're a 100-meter runner. You get them running the 200. You get that over with, and then they think, well, I'm going to run the 1 and the 2, and you say, guess what? We need a guy in a 4x400-meter relay. And they balk at that, and then you just encourage them, and you get them running that, and that 400 meter strengthens the 100 and the 200 meter runners.
That 400 meter is a real tough event, isn't it?
It's a killer.
Ruby, my daughter, as you know, competes in track and field, and she seems to excel in the 400. We've seen her compete at different levels, and so there is a maybe almost an inherent ability of some people to perform better at, say, a 800 than a 100 meter. So that's part of the game, isn't it? It's finding your role or place in the sport.
Yeah, well, that's why I allow them to go on any event at the beginning of the year in the first few meets to find out what is their event. Do they like that short 100, or do they like the 200, or they like the little grind out in the 400 where they can sort of start off a little slower, come in with the big kick, or they like the distance runners where they don't have to, the 800 and 1500 where they don't have to go as fast as the pace, but they can run longer. And everybody sort of has that own little thing in their mind, what distance they like to run, and so they run that, and it's a perfect fit.
Now, I had some of the best times in my life, lots of fun going down to the States in Oregon yeah. with the track team. Yeah. And I know that you have a good idea about some of the differences between how things are run in the United States and Canada. From a high school coach point of view, what are some of those differences, and what would you like to see up here in Canada? What changes would you think would benefit the schools and the system?
Well, every school down there has much better facilities for phys ed, gymnasiums, fields, baseball diamonds, tracks. Almost every school down there has their own track, where that's very seldom up here. They have coaches that are paid, and they have assistant coaches. They have seem to have a lot more participation. And they start out with that broad base down in the lower grades, and they encourage kids to play and have fun. It's not that competitive, and as it works up, of course, some kids drop out, as they do up here. But there's many more still in there at the end after grade 12. So I think the whole attitude of the United States towards sports is much more positive than ours is up here, and they put more money into it to provide the facilities for as many kids as possible.
So the facilities are superior. It sounds like there's just more money available to the system. Yeah. And are coaches paid a salary in the United States in high school
yeah,
for
head
coaching
teams?
Head
coaches are paid a salary, and assistant coaches are paid a salary. And, it, of course, that encourages more people to come out and coach, not just for the money, though, but because they like the sport. So you've got a lower ratio of coach to students as far as the number you're coaching, and you can get more specialized.
So you coached for 33 years. Did the province of BC ever pay you anything for that?
Not yet.
So all these coaches that we see showing up and putting in huge amounts of time, it's purely for the love of the game.
Definitely. High school coaches do not get paid any money.
Now, what about when you came into the system and you said that track and field was down? Why is that? Now, why wouldn't they make it mandatory that somebody is involved with managing or coaching track and field?
Well, coaching in high school is is not part of your job specs. It's totally voluntarily. And if you want to go out and coach, fine. If you don't, that's fine too. There's no pressure in the States either. That's simply a matter of whether you want to do it or not. It's just that down there, they get a little bit of financial remuneration.
So now tell us about how you raised money. If the system is not reinforced financially from the province or the state or the federal government, and you were taking these trips, I know that you had a very unique situation that came up with how you figured out to raise money. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, we needed uniforms one year, and we weren't going to gain money from the school, that's for sure. And rather than ask the kids to pay for them, I thought it might be a good idea to work for them. I'd lived out in 5 acres in Langley, and then my neighbors had a horse farm, and there was a huge pile of manure there. And a lot of my friends for years were coming out getting truckloads and trailer loads of it. So I thought, well, why don't we take some of that manure and bag it and then see if we can sell it around the neighborhood, everybody selling, you know, 5-10 bags to their neighbors. And then I'd bring it in my pickup truck and deliver it. We started doing that, and we had the kids come out and bag it at my place into a man from Glad Bags. We had hundreds of bags stored up, and I'd bring them in 50 at a time on my truck. Then we changed that a couple of years later, and we had big dump trucks bring the manure to the school, and we bagged it there and then delivered it. That continued, and everybody had to sell a certain number of bags. Then we went into pre-sales where they pre-sold it, and our profits went way up. We started, like I said, with $800 profit. Our biggest and best year was we sold a total of $28,500 worth, and we netted about $21,000. So for years, we had a budget between $15,000 and $20,000, which allowed us to travel to the States in nice buses and stay in hotels and just make it a lot more comfortable for the athletes where they're traveling. They didn't travel in these little yellow school buses for 300 or 400 miles. They traveled in a nice Greyhound type coach.
That's an incredible story. So you see everyone out there, the bovine scatology, there's a place and a role for that. There's money to be made out there. Get creative with those juices and let them flow. And it's interesting, I'm just thinking about the bus that we took down to Oregon versus the one that I saw later on, and you're talking about the higher quality. Some of those buses you had those kids in were fantastic.
You know, we had video in there by the end of my career. We had 3 or 4 televisions already installed in the bus and CD players. And, of course, the kids had their own CD player.
Now, let's get back to the athletes. What about the Jocko Homo, the guy that is absolutely born, obviously, based on form and structure to excel in sport? But this guy shows no commitment to academics. His grades are slipping. How do you enforce a standard on that athlete? How do you shake his mind up so that he doesn't allow that in terms of academics to fall to the wayside while he's excelling in his sport?
Well, I usually tell them that, you know, their education is first, definitely. And I don't want to see them working after their high school is over and they've got a whole wall full of gold medals in their events. I don't want to see them get a good education and a good job. And I said, you know, I don't want you talking about at your minimum wage paying job about how great an athlete were you in high school and you're in this job now that you just hate and you're going to have to do that for the rest of your life. So I tried to work that approach with them that, you know, this is only going to be for 2 or 3 years here on the track team. After that, you've got to go out into RW 101, which is real world, and an education is what's going to get you somewhere.
Now, I know that you have participated yourself in a lot of different programs that get into the psychology of living, the pursuit of excellence, and is just one to think of many. Do you bring some of this stuff into your coaching for the athletes?
Well, it allows me to think of like how I would feel in that situation. So if I'm feeling that way, then I'll take a shot at using some sort of a comment to sort of get them a little more upbeat or a little more motivated. It just depends. Some of them you never have to motivate. Just leave them alone. They're just very competitive. And the more you interfere with them, the less competitive they get or the more mixed up they get. But other cases, some kids just need a lot of encouragement. And that's where I think a lot of looking at yourself, these kind of courses really help because, you know, what do I need if I'm down and out? It's probably exactly what they're going to need when they're down and out as an athlete. And so you suggest that to them and hope it rings a bell and they come back. It's difficult. Sometimes you can never get them to go. You see some great athletes fall by the wayside, and yet you see some other athletes that just come on and they just keep getting better and better. And something inside clicks in them and they become champions as well.
Is it true that the sprinters are unique in their mindset? They've been compared to like thoroughbred horses, very, very finicky, compared to maybe the field event athletes. Are there differences that stand out between the different kinds of track and field athletes?
Sprinters are a little more high strung and, you know, they want to get the thing over as fast as possible and they don't really like long, grueling workouts. That was one of the problems with sprinters. You know, you'd have to make sure they did the whole workout because they, you know, sometimes they try to get out of a few of the 200s or 400s you gave them in their workout. The field people, they just loved it because it was a macho thing with them and they were always trying to outperform the other one and shot the hammer or the discus. So they were self-motivated just by that because they could see their performance even in practice. They could measure their throws where the sprinter could only tell his time when he had a competition. So practice seemed to be a little waste of time for them.
Now, some of your athletes went to the Olympics and the Commonwealth Games, which is quite extraordinary. What are your thoughts about competing at that level as an athlete and the controversy of drugs in sport? Do you think it's ever going to stop? Do you think they're ever going to determine detection methods that are 100% guaranteed?
Well, I'm not sure about that because it seems to be your pharmacy versus my pharmacy and who's got the best drugs and who can outdo the other. But I think they've come up with a lot of tests now to and testing where they test the athletes randomly in a much more frequent rate. So I think people are getting scared about that, and I don't think there's a tendency to go on drugs, especially since this latest scandal in the States. And I'm totally unaware of any of my athletes ever using it. I know in high school or in the Olympics, it just wasn't thought of.
So the athletes in high school up here anyway, you're unaware of any of them ever being confronted with that temptation or opportunity?
Yeah, I don't think, and that shows in their performances. None of them were, you know, they won high school championships, but they tended to be within the times or the distances of all the previous years. There was nothing really super exceptional.
Now, we'll just deviate a little bit here. As a biology teacher, and knowing that energy is critical to life and health and preventive medicine, very, very important. As a biology teacher, maybe you can give us a quick lesson in energy chemistry. Could you talk about ATP and what it is and how it's made in the body and how it's drawn from food into the body?
Well, ATP is called adenosine triphosphate, and that's the energy currency or the money that the cell runs on. It allows the cell to perform all its functions. It's basically a result of our intake of glucose, fats, or amino acids, and primarily glucose, and it runs through a series of reactions, three reactions, where it converts the chemical energy in the glucose molecule, which is in the bonds, and it converts it into a different type of molecule called ATP. And when one of those phosphate molecules on the ATP is broken, it releases energy, and that allows the cell to do its work. It's quite a complex reaction, but it's universal to all plants and animals. They all get their energy from ATP and the metabolism of glucose. You can also metabolize fats and amino acids that way as well.
So when we eat food, we actually transfer the initial stages of that potential energy.
Right.
And then through chemistry in the body, that is eventually transferred into the formation of ATP.
Right. It's just like money because it's the energy currency. If you could go to somewhere like Holland or France or Yugoslavia or anything, and you came over to the United States with that money, they wouldn't take it at the 7-Eleven. So you'd have to go to a bank and get it converted into American money. So that's basically what the body or the cell is doing in the mitochondria of the cell. It's taking the glucose and the fat and the amino acid, which we've taken in through our ingestion and digestion, and it's converting it into a different chemical form that the body or the cell can use.
And so the muscle of the body is really where a lot of these mitochondria reside, and so there's a connection between how they contract and the supply of ATP.
Yeah. Well, all cells have the mitochondria, and muscle cells, of course, and nerve cells have a lot more because their energy needs are a lot greater, so they have more than the skin cells or other cells.
Did you emphasize any strategies or techniques for preparing for the big track meet for the athletes?
I got this from a Tony Robbins tape when I'm watching one of those infomercials on TV. And I used to tell my kids to be unreasonable. Yeah, because the reasons were, that means that the reasons that we give ourselves, because we're giving them all the time, why we can't win, why we can't do this, those are the things that stop them. So when those came up or somebody else gave them a reason why they couldn't win the race or do well or make the meet or whatever, I just say, well, just be totally unreasonable. And don't listen to that. Just listen to yourself and give it your best shot. There's no other way you can do it other than giving it your best shot. But if you're listening to a whole bunch of reasons from your friends and especially yourself, then that's just going to stop you in your tracks. And you're right. You're not going to get anywhere. So I thought that was a really good definition of being reasonable.
Yeah, that's great. It's almost like being true to yourself also.
Yeah.
Very, very important. That's great, Ken. Now, what advice do you have for someone younger today who's thinking about going into teaching, maybe high school, maybe being a coach?
Well, I'd like to see a lot more people go into teaching. I think the kids today are as good as ever, and we've got a few problems in the schools. But, you know, these kids, all they're looking for is someone that cares about them. And if you can get out there as a teacher and start up a club or a team or a band or a drama class and get these kids off the streets and get them into doing something where they experience some success, I think that's a lot better than having them hanging around somewhere or, you know, getting into that wrong element in our society. But I just don't think there's enough of that going on out there in terms of the educational field. There's not enough people giving up their time to help others that are coming along. And I'm especially grateful to all my high school coaches that helped me and got me on the right track. I wasn't going to ever go on the wrong track, but they certainly opened up a whole new world for me, and I'll never forget it.
Now, that's excellent, Ken. Thanks very much. Very well said. Our time is gone, and thanks very much for a great interview, Ken. It was my pleasure to have you on our show. Thanks for participating as our special expert guest. And before you go, we always ask our special guests for maybe a word of advice or something to help motivate us to take on the challenge of living. Anything that comes to mind?
Well, much what I said at the beginning, I think we're all an elastic band, and sometimes we don't think we can stretch out and reach that goal ahead of us. So if we just stretch a little further, it's funny what happens when you do that. And once you get there, you know, you find out that elastic band can stretch a little further. So you can't do it all at once, but just take it a bit at a time and stretch that band and set one goal, reach it, set another goal, reach it, and stretch and stretch and stretch.
Ken Taylor retired from teaching at Burnaby Central Secondary School, teaching biology and phys ed, inducted into the Burnaby Sports Hall of Fame in 2004. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Corey.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Representing lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight, Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHawley.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.